you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talking Monkeys, the official podcast of the show 12 Monkeys. My name is Clark Wolf. I am so excited to be here with you today. So 12 Monkeys is one of my favorite new shows of last year, and now we're here diving into season two, and I'm thrilled to be talking with our two leads of the show and the co-creator of the series and season two showrunner. So ladies and gentlemen, I have with me Mr. Aaron Stanford, Miss Amanda Shull, and Mr. Terry Matchalis. Did I say it right? I did it wrong again. Matchalis.
That's okay.
That's all right.
It's all right. It happens.
It's okay. We just met today.
We did.
And
they mispronounced it at my college graduation, so I might as well.
You're more than an avatar to me now.
Right.
After years of internet talking. So, guys, this is super exciting. You know, this show, fans, the people who watch this show are just such fans, and there's so much mythology and so much that goes into it. So I know they're going to be excited to talk monkeys with us. It's also a funny title, so it just makes me laugh.
It had to be the title.
It had to be. How could it not be?
We knew it had to be.
So we're going to start diving into the premiere episode of season two. But first, I just wanted to touch on a couple of things where we left at the end of season one. So just a quick 30-second recap. Aaron, burned alive. That was unfortunate. I have a theory we're going to see him again, but that's just a fan talking. Cassie, you know, we have this moment of I'm not cut out for this. And then we have this real turning point where maybe she is cut out for this, which is really fun. You know, we get to that point where Ramsay says, look, it took time travel to create time travel and there are no straight lines, which is a great line. Where did that come from?
Probably the writer's room, probably, where we were just like, there really was no straight lines. I think actually that line came from a episode 10. The first person who said it was Jennifer Goines in a voiceover. I think it was actually something when we cut together a montage. I think Travis Fickett came up with the idea that, you know, certainly the movie is in a loop, that there might be several loops in a bigger loop. Within a bigger loop in the show. So it was one of the things we thought was cool.
It was very cool. It was a great line. And of course, we get to the end, that final scene, that final confrontation where Cassie is the one who ultimately ends up shooting Ramsay and gets hit by a bullet herself. But, you know, Amanda, just real fast while we're sort of recapping these last final moments that set us up for the premiere, you know, where can you tell us a little bit about, like, at that point, it felt for me as a fan, maybe that was the real turning point. But I would love to hear for you as an actress, you know, that turning point for Cassie where she's like, all right, I'm in, I'm all in.
Right. I think that's astute of you to realize that that's the first moment she gets to realize the turning point. I think there were several little leans towards that moment throughout the season. And Terry did a wonderful job of constantly reminding me and giving me a pretty broad picture of where she was going without the specifics. So I knew that she was going to not essentially, but actually kind of literally trade places with Cole by the end of the first season. And so that was the first time she gets to physically express that. There he is. There's Ramsay. There's the person that is at the heart of everything she believes is leading to to this virus escaping and causing world destruction. And she has her chance to end it right there because Cole isn't going to. He has this soft spot. So what are you chuckling at over
there?
Funny.
You're calling me soft. That's all.
Well, you're not shooting him. You have the opportunity to get the jump and shoot him down in the head. Bullet done, over, save the world, perhaps. And
sometimes it takes the most bravery to show mercy.
Ugh.
So that's all I can say.
She scoffs. Well, we're going to get into all of that because I'm so glad that you brought up the role reversal, because I think the fans definitely, with this season 2 premiere, at least that's what I took away from it. So I'm going to be really excited to unpack that with you guys. So Cassie is shot in this exchange as well. Cole sends her back or forward to Jones, which, by the way, one of my favorite things in season 1 was Jones and Cassie together. That was just those moments are so incredible. And when I saw that they were sending you back and that's hopefully where season 2 would pick up, I was like, yes, more Jones and Cassie together. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think that was episode 210 where, 12?
Yeah.
Wow, really? Was it that?
Young Jones.
Yeah, was it? Wow. Really? That was a lot of fun because for me, my character lived primarily in what we would consider present day. And I got to see all of these people coming and going to work, but I didn't get to work a whole lot with them because I didn't live in the facility. So that was a lot of fun when I finally got a chance to play with Barbara.
Yeah, some of my favorite scenes between the three of you guys. And Cassie splinters, she goes. Deacon and the messengers equal bad news back at the facility. and Jennifer's up and away. She's going to go on this multi-city tour. And of course, Cole. So it looks like Cole is going to let Ramsey die, but no, he's not. And I actually was really glad that you didn't, because I like Ramsey too. But you know, there's a lot of turning points, I think, and the realization of these turning points in this episode specifically. Aaron, for you, you know, what do you think? I mean, it seems like the brotherhood between Ramsey and Cole was kind of there from the beginning, but I think we really see it in this moment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're family. They're brothers. They lived through the apocalypse together. They've been through everything together. So, you know, there's a tremendous depth to the relationship. And, you know, I always say, like family in general, you fight and you have disagreements and you turn your backs on one another. But at the end of the day, you're still family. And I think at the end of season 1, you know, that's what he realizes, and that it's essentially impossible to let him die.
Yeah. Well, and in terms of the role reversal that we were sort of talking about, would you say that Cole kind of hasn't become softer, but you know, has become more hopeful by the end of the season?
He's done both. He has become softer. He's supple. you know, he gradually, over the course of season 1, his icy demeanor you know, melts, and it's because of Cassie, and it's because of his experiences in our time, in the present, and through what he sees and experiences, he gradually he learns to love, and he also learns to value life, which he at the top of the story, he really doesn't value life. He doesn't value the life of others. He's very, very quick to take a life. He's very quick to kill someone, and he's essentially on a suicide mission. He's ready to wipe out his life as he knows it, and by the end of season 1, that has changed completely, and he does want to live. And
he's a lot cuddlier.
He's
definitely.
He's a more cuddly Cole. It's true.
That's
softer side of Cole.
The softer side of him. So let's say that's a great place to sort of go into season 2. And so, Terry, I would love to start by asking you. You know, you've got this series that I think, you know, was very well received by the people that watched it, and was ambitious in a lot of different ways. When you're going into a season 2 of something like this, what are your objectives? How do you even begin? Where do you start?
Well, it's something you got to think about in season 1 too. I mean, we were setting up things like the 12 monkeys and their ultimate agenda, and the Red Forest, and Cassie's sort of connection to, in that moment with Olivia in the Red Forest, to we knew Cassie was going to go forward. We knew where Cole's arc was going to be at the start of it. We knew we wanted to see Deacon again. So we had to set up quite a bit. But in a second season, you also want to open it up too. You know, we always knew that this wasn't and couldn't and shouldn't be the virus show, where they go from lab to lab week to week, that it had to be more. So that was why the army, we changed the Army of the 12 Monkeys from the movie as being this, you know, just a kind of crazy animal cult to something intrinsically tied to the way time works. So, you know, between seasons, you come up with a whole lot of ideas. And I think we had mapped out kind of a rough arc for what season two is. You'll see in the, it becomes a kind of dark Wizard of Oz. And as the season goes on, that's not spoiling too much, I don't think.
Are there flying monkeys?
There's no flying monkeys exactly, but there is a...
You're right. I can't believe we missed that.
There's definitely a journey to a place with a goal at the end. And so, you know, and then you get into a room with your writers, and it changes. But so it is a pretty complicated process to go through, because you have to explore a lot of different things. Even though we ended up doing exactly what we set out to do, you do deviate a lot and come up with new stuff along the way.
Sure. Well, the season opens with a bang, literally. After the quick recap, we have this incredible sequence on the bridge. You guys actually shot in Budapest.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of crazy. Can you guys talk a little bit about that?
Well, we did it over a few episodes. So there's stuff in episodes 3 and 4 that are also Budapest, but double for a different time period, because the architecture is a little bit older and more antiquated. But it was, I don't know, it was a blast for me to go to Budapest with you guys. It was crazy. I think no one on the crew spoke any English except for one AD who had to translate everything. There certainly weren't for you guys, there weren't trailers or anything. There was nothing glamorous about it except for the cheese and meat and wine at the end of the night we would get to.
I mean, and the glamour also of being able to essentially own, one of their biggest, cultural monuments for the evening and blow cars up on it. You know, it was incredible.
Yeah, and having aerial shots and just getting that architecture in there gave it such scope. And that's, we knew we wanted to open up the show that way.
Yeah.
In season one, had you guys, because, I mean, you know, there are scenes that take place around the world in season one, but had you all actually traveled on location in these landmarks or in these places, or had you know, the city been doubled, or did you shoot on sets?
Season one, we traveled to Macedonia.
Oh, wow.
To shoot in Macedonia, which didn't double for Macedonia, it doubled for Syria, correct?
Chechnya,
excuse me. I didn't get to go to the Dominican. Aaron did. That was a hot second that you were there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just a quick, really like a maybe 36-hour trip or something like that. We shot in there really fast, and we filmed everything in this very, very tightly packed little favela, very reminiscent of what you see in the movie City of God. And we had a lot of help from the locals, who were really excited about us being there. I don't think they get a lot of production in that area. It's been, all the travel's been great. We work with this outfit who like specializes in bringing little splinter units wherever you want to go all over the globe. They have contacts, and they've made it possible, and we've gotten some really exciting stuff out of it.
And I think because it was a smaller unit, we got to go places where a larger crew probably wouldn't have been allowed or accepted. And so we had an opportunity, like I said, when we went to Macedonia, the monastery where we shot was it like 14th century or 4th century or something? It was
Roman.
It was gorgeous. And it was literally in the clouds. It was very high up on the top of a mountain, so that it wouldn't essentially be overtaken when people went through Macedonia, because I think Macedonia unfortunately claims itself to be one of the most conquered countries in the world. Yeah. And so it was a place that I know I personally would most likely never have had the opportunity to see myself. It was quite beautiful.
I was going to say, for Budapest, that bridge was, I think, one of the most amazing shoots we ever had. Just, we had 2 nights to do it, and then we only had like 7-hour blocks on each night. We had drones in the air. We had storms on the way. We had Allison Down, who plays the striking woman, is very pregnant. Olivia is very pregnant and did not want her to be struck by lightning. I got the flu. Kirk Aceveda got the flu. It was really, really intense. And so I remember being terrified we weren't going to get the jump. The stunt guys weren't going to be able to get the jump. But we pulled it off. It was incredible amount of adrenaline. And it was really cool to occupy that bridge. I mean, everyone in town knew we were there. It was really cool.
I'm sure. And it raised the stakes, too. So in that scene, Cole and Ramsey are working together, even though they're not besties again, as they say, I suppose. And you know, one of the things that sort of stood out to me about that scene, in addition to Cole and Ramsey having to do what they do, was Olivia is not handling this idea of fate not working out the way she thought. She is not handling this well. And I think that that's something that's really interesting about this series in general, this constant battle between, is there such a thing as fate? Is, you know, your destiny in your own hands? And, you know, the seeds got planted in season one, but she's very aggressively
becoming
talking
frustrated
about it.
Yeah. With what she was told was going to happen and what she's been promised. Yeah, keep your eye on Olivia.
I am sure that we will. And we still don't know technically who the witness is. Yes?
Do not know who the witness is.
Man,
no.
That
mysterious figurehead.
It's driving me crazy.
Behind the 12 monkeys. But you will. You will.
We will. Okay, so back in, or forward in, I'm going to say back in, but it's the future. Back to the future. So, you know, Cassie lands with Jones and the messengers are in there, and, you know, I suppose Cassie's being pieced back together, and of course Jones has to do a lot of catching up for her. And then later, you know, we've got Deacon in the mix as well, who seemed like a pretty sketchy figure in season one, but now we seem to like him a little. Is that...
Oh, do you like him?
I don't know.
You're
I don't,
sick, maybe.
Well, I just feel like...
He's a sociopath.
I just feel like...
He's charming. He is very charming. The Todd Sashwick is charming. I mean, that's one of the reasons we cast him, was because, you know, I think initially when we wrote the script, we were like Ed Harris type. And we had a bunch of Ed Harris types come in, and we were like, this is kind of feeling like not right. And then he came in and was just like, I'm not going to out Ed Harris. I'm going to do my thing. And it was instantly like, oh, it's Todd. We just knew it had to be Todd. And I remember breaking the finale when we knew we were going to bring Deacon back, that this, what an interesting relationship it would be for Cassie to suddenly be facing Deacon, who Deacon represents the kind of the darker side of Cole, which is kind of something she needs, because the softer side of Cole has come out and is not doing what needs to be done, won't kill Ramsey, won't, as we see at the end of the episode, won't kill Jennifer. Deacon makes a lot of sense. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it makes sense at that moment, because who better to introduce her to this world she's now going to have to exist in than somebody who considers himself the scavenger king of that life. And he's going to guide her in a way that he knows best, that she knows nothing about. The only thing she knows about this world is what Cole has told her, and Cole has only told her bits and pieces of it. So she has no idea what she's getting herself into, and it's sort of like being pushed into the deep end.
Sure. And, well, I thought it was super... I'm not going to, like, I don't want to skip over the mansplosion, the explosion of the gentleman or the messenger.
The gentleman.
The messenger.
Mansplosion.
I realized how that sounded after I said it.
For season
two. Yeah.
Mansplosions.
Galore.
Oh.
No, but I mean.
It finally just hit Amanda what mansplosion might mean.
I'm just a delicate flower.
It's what it is like on set when the boys make a terrible joke, and about 10 minutes later it hits Amanda like a brick wall. Oh!
This has gone off the rails. Yes, that was my fault. I'll take full responsibility for that.
The messenger explosion.
The messenger.
Jones's, yes, sort of attack.
Yeah, which was super badass. And also, like, the effect looks great. I mean, like, can you talk about, like, first of all, you know, you've got to tell your crew, you've got to tell your team, so we've got to make this dude, like, you know, can you talk about
that?
Well,
we have an amazing visual effects company called Folk. They're out of Montreal, and they just they're very classy in how they do their effects, and they do a lot of previs and that, and we do a lot of practical stuff with the blood and the explosions on set. But yeah, no, we're very lucky to have them. I mean, wait and see where we go and the kind of effects we do by the last three episodes of the show. They're mind-blowing.
Terry's glossing over the fact that his scripts are very illustrative as well. So you get a very clear visual when we're reading it of what they want the end product to look like, but at the same time, sometimes it deviates, I'd say. You know, what they end up doing is different from what was on the page, but we have a general idea because it's very specifically and beautifully written.
If I think a that man's particular explosion scene, can be written beautifully. It was described as a hot pile of steaming guts.
Yeah, hot pile of steaming guts.
Boiling on the surface of the time travel chair.
Explodes like a blood-filled balloon as the beam intensifies. Yeah, it was, you know, yeah, that was also a scene I remember coming up. I was on a hike when I came up with that idea. I remember like, oh, it'd be so cool. And then Jones, it was like, because one of the things we had talked about is, would Jones really just turn over a time machine to the villains? And it was something that kind of we went back and forth on. I'm like, well, probably. I mean, she essentially kind of, we felt like she gave up at the end of last season, but she's also super smart. Would she just do that?
And she's hard as nails.
Yeah. And it's just a great way to say, oh yeah, Jones is back.
Definitely totes back. So, so that happens. And then we're going to go back to, with Cole and Ramsey. So we figured out that, Ramsey has a tracking device.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's what's probably allowing the army to follow him. So basically Cole goes to Dr. Kelman. Was that his name?
Kelman, yeah.
Kelman. So Cole goes to
Benjamin Kelman.
Benjamin. So he finds him and says, listen, bro,
you go. We got a whole bat. That's Brendan Coyle from Downton Abbey, or at least for Amanda and I, was a big deal of being Downton Abbey fan.
Yeah, I was very excited. Do you remember when we met him in the lobby in Budapest? Aaron and I were out to dinner and we came into the lobby and there was Mr. Bates standing in the lobby by the elevators. And I kind of stopped and I turned to Aaron. And then I looked back at Mr. Bates and I waved to him from across the whole lobby area. And he picked up his hand and he waved back to me. And to, what are you laughing about?
It's fun. Watching you relive it.
I remember thinking Mr. Bates is waving at me. And then I thought, does he just think I'm a crazy fan? And then I got up a little bit closer and he had watched the whole first season. He knew who
fan.
Yeah. And he said, hi, Amanda. And he gave me a hug. And then he said, hi, Aaron. And he hugged Aaron. It was so flattering.
Very, very, very charming guy.
Yeah, very charming. Gentleman. It was very sweet.
Yeah, it was. And that he knew the plot better than most of the crew. I mean, he really knew it well. But it was also, it was fun because Amanda, you didn't used to call him Mr. Bates. You used to call him Master Bates, which was always an issue. I was like, it's not Master. That is a different show.
Exactly.
My mom will never be able to listen to this. Just don't tell her what it means. So,
so, okay. So we have Mr. Bates, a.k.a. Dr. Kelman, here. And so he's got to help out. He's got to help. Cole's trying to convince him to, you know, take this tracking device out of Ramsey. But we also have this issue of, you know, he was kind of a bad guy. Can we trust him? No, he's saying, look, I've taken a turn. I've turned a corner and you can trust me. And we as the audience are going, uh-oh, can we trust him? I hope we can. So
you can't.
Spoiler alert. So actually,
clearly you can't. We're not going to get Brendan Coyle and just be like he's the nice guy and he leaves. So yeah,
it was unfortunate though that he only had that one episode.
Yeah, well, we had kind of always planned it that way, is to bring somebody back for this juicy thing. But it really, the character was really there to mostly inform Cole. You know, was that here's a guy who tried to change, you know, tried to be better and couldn't fully do it. And to see Cole meet the guy and be hopeful about meeting somebody who did change and then realizing that guy didn't, what did that mean for Cole? And certainly by the end, you know, he shoots the guy. And is it, the question is he going to do the same for Jennifer Goins? But he cannot do it.
And that is something that I noticed. So Aaron, for you, you know, like, look, we talked about it at the beginning of our conversation here, and I think the audience saw it at the end of season one. Cole is a little, he's changed, he's learned to love all of these things, and yet he had no problem shooting this guy in the face when, I mean, right?
Well, maybe that's my, my fault in performance, because he definitely, like, he it's meant to be a tough moment. He doesn't want to do that anymore, you know. He like Terry said, he has changed, and he's trying to change his ways, and he finds himself in a situation where
you gotta put him down.
Basically he has to do it. There's nothing for it, but he definitely regrets it.
Well, and I should be more clear. And I did not mean it that way. But what I did mean was, you know, when you're playing these levels, when you're playing both sides of it, you know, you do have to keep the audience guessing. And we have seen that Cole has these hesitations, but yeah, in this moment, when it came down to it, he did it.
He's going
to
pull the trigger.
And so that's important. I felt like as an audience member, that was important for me to know, like, okay, Cole is capable, so that later in this episode, when it came down to the...
That he might actually shoot Jennifer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I can't wait to talk about. But before we do, so let's get back to Deacon for a second. So back in 2043, Cassie and Deacon they had a relationship that I hadn't seen Deacon have with really anyone else, if that makes sense. Like, he's got his West 7 guys and...
Right, but you haven't seen Deacon with a woman.
That's right.
Either.
Yeah.
And I think that also Cassie is a very different woman from probably any that he's ever existed with.
Like maybe Max, who's...
Right.
Max
was a scav.
Right.
And Cassie comes in, and although she's shot and she's a little bit hardened for Cassie, she's probably just about the softest thing he's ever seen, because she's untainted at this point. So I think he sees her in a very different light and is willing to, I don't know if I'm allowed to open anything up since this is the first episode that we're just discussing here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and also Cassie, meanwhile, is using her newly acquired, Cassie's always been smart and she can clearly think on her feet. And mm-hmm. I kind of loved how she sort of gave him an examination, said, you need my help. And mm-hmm. here's why.
Right.
You're sick and I can help you.
Right.
It was incredible leverage, but it was also like real fast that she was able to do that. And that was kind of awesome.
Right. Well, there's a moment when Deacon is holding a gun to her head.
Yes.
And there's the
slight, shake.
Right. There's a shake.
I noticed
in his hand,
that.
Which is very strange. This person who appears, Cassie doesn't know anything about him at this point, but appears very capable of pulling a trigger. Why he would have a shaky hand is a little bit confusing. And then she assesses him and she does a very quick realization when she does, you know, sees the ring in his eyes and puts it all together. And she's able to use that, like you said, as leverage. Cassie is nothing if not adaptive and cunning. And we saw that a little bit in the first season when she needed to get places, when it was her mission to try to figure out an in for things. She's very capable of thinking on her feet and finding a way into a situation, whether it pans out the way that she hopes or not. But at that moment, she knows that the only way that she can get in is to trick this person. The next step would possibly be to use her sexuality. She's not above using anything necessary to accomplish the mission.
No,
oh, shut up, Aaron Stanford.
So
hesitation.
So they go and they
this is an age-old set bit that we do. We pick on Amanda a lot. We also kind of pick on the question on the set is,
oh, shut up. No, don't even start.
Let's just ask it. Is that maybe she's not a very good doctor?
Shut up.
We have never really seen her.
Wait until the end of the season.
Okay. She I think she does help somebody briefly. But we always see her on set of Cassie's actually a terrible doctor.
Oh.
She might not even have her license. We don't even know.
Poor Cassie. So Deacon and Cassie go find, they let in the guys from the West 7.
We're eating a cheese plate here.
The cheese plate is delicious.
When
we're done with this episode, I'm going to eat like half of those cheeses. And then we see Whitley, who I love.
Damore Barnes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad he was back. And now I guess that whole group is sort of They're on the same side for now,
right?
To overtake the messengers
in the ashes at the end. Have we gotten there? Are we working our way to that point?
Okay. Yeah, go for it, girl.
Okay. Yeah. No, it was interesting, and it was a lot of fun for me because these people had been working together for an entire season in this facility, and that was my first episode to get to work in the facility with these other actors, and I was friends with all of them, but I hadn't gotten a chance to exist in that world with them, and that was a lot of fun.
It was, well, and also, this might be a question for Terry, but while we're talking about the messengers, so they appear to be blue, and yet when they go back, they are not blue anymore. Yes, they take it off.
No, everybody calls them, I think, Natalie Abrams. The Blue Man Group, that's what calls them Blue Man Group. Yeah, they are not blue, they're gray, but in the light of the time machine, they're totally blue. But yeah, it was always the idea that that was a sort of tribal, religious, you know, culty, ceremony thing that they had on.
All right, good. That was just a.
He says we were, you know, at some point, we're wiping the ashes of yesterday mm-hmm. away, so that they can be reborn sure. in time, sort of.
And that's going to be trouble for us later down the road, but I'm sure we'll get to that. Because they said they ultimately send back six, yeah?
Six go back.
All right, so back in our present, Cole and Ramsey are about to say bye, see you later, we can't be friends anymore. I know I'm like running through this, obviously, very quickly.
That's about right.
But Ramsey, you know, says... reveals to Cole, like, you know, okay, I know some more stuff. I know about New York City. I know about the year of the monkey. And, you know, I kind of loved that they sort of go, all right, well, let's just go do this together. I mean, and it was smart because, you know, Ramsey at that point kind of says, what? I have, you know,
I'm not sure you're going to be able to change this.
Exactly.
Because we might be locked into fate, but I can't let you die. And you're totally going to die if you go and do this, and I just can't. You know, the thing about last season for him was he really did think he killed Cole in 1987 and lived with that for all that time and can't live with that again.
It's kind of cool, too, as a viewer to watch two actors not only watch their relationship grow, not only in different scenes, but different time periods and very different circumstances. And you guys have a nice chemistry.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
They love each other.
Besties.
Romance on and off the screen.
It's a great, well, it's a really compelling, it is a compelling relationship, I'd say. So that takes us to New York City. Jennifer Goins is bopping around. She is not doing well. She's hearing the voices. She's very Jennifer. That's right. And then you have this incredible.
She's very Emily.
She's the best on social media anyway. I haven't met her yet. By the way, Emily and you, Amanda, have the best hair on television. I'm sure our other listeners will echo that same sentiment. But I've just been noticing.
Our hair department will be thrilled to hear that.
But you guys have great hair. Regan, you have great hair.
But who has better hair between the two of them?
Don't make it about that.
Log on.
Exactly.
And send your votes
and comment
on Twitter.
Twitter polls. So Jennifer's there. She's in a daze. She goes to speed dating, produces this vial, this really hilarious scene. But also...
with Brian Quinn from The Impractical Jokers.
I don't know what The Impractical Jokers is.
It's a hilarious show on True TV. You got to watch it, Impractical Jokers.
Oh, I know what it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Camera show. It's
love
fantastic.
It. Yeah, he was great. And
he's fantastic.
But we reveal a lot in this scene, too, because not only does Jennifer produce that vial, but she produces a gun and says, kill me, which comes up later in the show. And that's very interesting to me.
She wants to be stopped. She wants somebody to stop her. Yeah, I mean, I think that scene, you know, for us is, you know, it's really Jennifer really has this scene and the last scene. And in, you know, three pages, get across every side of Jennifer Goins, and Emily kills it. You know, she's able to show the funny, the crazy, the scary, and then the deep hurt. Like, please don't let me do this. It's a great scene.
Well, and I was picking up on maybe some parallels, like Aaron, you were saying earlier about Cole in season one sort of has a suicide mission. And now we're seeing, you know, Jennifer sort of say, begging to this stranger on a speed date and then later to Cole, kill me, somebody kill me, please.
Yeah, well, she's kind of, it's not that she won't take it upon herself because right. She clearly feels she has some purpose. Whatever, you know, last season she was in that room with Olivia and says, she said to her, don't you want to be a daughter again? And we don't know what Olivia filled her head with. So, but we will find out in the next episode yes. 2. We're going to find out.
We will. So, as we talked about earlier, you know, in 2043, the team kind of unites against the messengers, and they overheat the core, or they you know, and so there's this huge explosion, but it looks like our heroes have gotten control of the facility again. But Joan says something really interesting. Yeah, this could take maybe a year to repair. And my first thought was, oh my God, like Cassie's gonna have to spend a year there. And then I was like, are we gonna see that? But we don't see that. And I'm curious for you guys, like, was there ever a conversation about, well, we don't see it yet. This is what time travel.
You will get a glimpse of this in episode 2 of her time in the future. We do get a glimpse of it, but yeah.
May I say about that something just a little behind the scenes factoid is that we block shot. What are you laughing at? The word factoid?
That's a funny word. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Coming from you, for sure.
I think you find most things that come from me pretty ridiculous. Back to my factoid. We block shot the first 4 episodes, which means that we were shooting them simultaneously for reasons of location, you know, or even I think a lot of it was done in Budapest, and we waited until October to do that, so we had to take care of other things, and we shot episode 2 before we shot episode 1, which for me personally was daunting because
she had already changed. Yeah, you had already spent all that time in the apocalypse,
right? And that was intimidating to try to live that out without getting a chance to live it out, you know, yet on screen.
But you did it, and it's amazing.
Well,
it is.
That's
very kind.
You can see
it in your eyes. You can see it, like, all over the place. It's really good.
Thanks. That was my factoid.
I mean, that's a great factoid, though. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure the audience, too, like, to imagine, first of all, Terry, you and I were talking about this off mic, like, keeping track of all of the timelines and keeping track. I know it's all up here in your head, and that's amazing. But I would also imagine that shooting out of sequence,
it was really hard. I mean, on the crew. I mean, it was, God, people went insane. 4 episodes out of sequence in a time travel. They had nobody knew if they were coming or going, and so I ended up spending, I think, like 2 months there just answering every department from props to, okay, so we're coming. I'm like, okay, well, he has the scar here because he would have done this, that, and the other thing. You have to be on set for it. Yeah. And just to keep the actors, too, to remember where they are emotionally, too, sometimes. Because we pack so much in for these guys. They're exhausted. Our actors, they got to do 8-9-page scenes from across 4 different episodes. It's really hard on everybody, but the scope of what you can get, because you block shoot, the money ends up on the screen a lot more. You're able to do better locations, you're able to spend more time on particularly difficult sequences, so it's just good for the show.
Yeah, I mean, it looks great, and you know, I would never have guessed that they were out of sequence. So finally, our big cliffhanger. So we get to we're back in New York. We get to the top of the roof. Cole finds Jennifer in this crowd during Chinese New Year celebration, and chases her to the top of the roof. And she's got the vial, and it's kind of like speed dating again, which is very appropriate considering that Jennifer kind of has a little thing for Cole. But you know, she produces the vial and says, "I got it," and he's like, "Don't do it." And then, you know, you have this, again, this thing that I wasn't expecting from Cole. I just wasn't. And I didn't fully realize where his character was at until I saw this scene. Because he, I would say, I don't know if you would say, would you say that he sort of protects Jennifer in this moment?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he ends up putting a gun on Cassie, which I don't think anybody would expect. Yeah. But yeah, you know, as we discussed earlier, he's a changed man. He values life. He doesn't want to kill people. And not only that, but he's learned from experience that all these assassination missions that he's been sent on, nothing ever comes out of any of them. They just don't work. So he just decides in this moment that, you know, this is he's going to try a different path.
I was just going to say that was a tricky bit of work, that last scene between Cassie and Cole, to do and to get right, because obviously the image of Cole and Cassie pointing a gun at each other is like, holy shit. It kind of broadcasts the season. These two are really far apart now, but it was also, how do we get there believably? I remember we had like an all night shoot on that roof. Remember that? Because we had 2 episodes worth of stuff to do. And that scene alone, like, what was the aggressive, like, step forward Cassie took that would put Cole in enough of a defensive way?
Yes.
She cocked the gun. When does Cole raise the gun? When is it like, when is it believable?
Yeah.
You know, and how is it believable? And it works. It, like, we weren't quite sure. We were like, we went back and forth. I remember Aaron and I were like, maybe he drops the gun and just she's got the gun on him. And then ultimately we're like, it is such a great to go out on that. And if we can get there believably, it's the right way to go.
Right. We discussed the minutiae of that. I mean, right down to, do you waver the gun for a second, which gives the other person the opportunity to lift, you know.
Well, the step forward, Cassie, right, step forward. Right.
And on which line specifically, exactly. And then how? What is his reaction? Is it immediate? Is it not? I remember there being a lot of discussion, a lot of 4 a.m. discussion, and that was also when we were shooting both episodes, first and second, where we pick it up again. So we had 2 directors there at that time. So there was a lot of input that was being raised.
But I got to say, what I think this is what's so great about Aaron and Amanda, like the three of us have such a great shorthand now, because we've been doing this since the crazy days of Detroit, when we were like in the pilot, when we shot the pilot
20 years ago.
Yeah, it feels like a million years ago. But if anybody who survived the pilot together is, we're bonded in blood. But that we're able to quickly be like, I don't know about this, I don't know about this, and all right, well, we'll try this and we'll try 6 different ways, and they're amazing partners to work with.
And you need it. The schedule that we work on, you do not have time to really get into it and hash things out in the manner that you might on another project. So if you don't have that shorthand, there just is no communication.
Yeah.
I don't want to beat this over the head, but Aaron, I wanted to ask you if there was a reason, and maybe we'll find this out later in the season, but is there a reason why, because we did see Cole, you know, kill this doctor, and obviously he was conflicted about it, but he did it in this same episode, and now he's protecting Jennifer because he's decided, you know, these assassination missions don't always work the way we think they will, but is there anything more to Jennifer, meaning like why he would protect Jennifer Goins?
Yeah, of course. I mean, first of all, there's the personal connection he has to her. And then, you know, maybe most importantly, he can sense that she has a very important role to play in everything. And he's also the one person who kind of understands that that she's not just crazy. There's something else happening behind the eyes. He knows that she's absolutely key. He knows she's important, and he has a personal connection to her. And I think all those things combined make him unwilling to pull the trigger.
Yeah, the first bond in the first episode of season one is Cassie, and the second bond, I think, is Jennifer, and seeing this broken person was a good... it's an interesting dynamic that's going to occur at the top of episode 2 between everybody.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. That is a very nice segue into maybe closing out,
I think so,
this episode.
Until
we meet
episode
again.
Episode 2 of season 2, Primary.
Episode 2 will be back, or will be coming soon, and we will be back as well. So thank you guys for listening, and be sure to reach out on social media. Let us know your thoughts. What did you think of this episode? Do you have questions? Did you enjoy Talking Monkeys as much as we did? We have a cheese plate, so...
We're going to eat some more cheese, and then we're going to talk episode
only
two.
Only we could broadcast it. It's just amazing.
We'll take a picture and share it on social media.
All right, guys. Well, thank you all so much for watching. Do you guys want to tell everyone where they can find you on social, even if they, you know, probably already know?
Sure. It's just my first and last name. It's not very cleverly thought out.
Boring.
Amanda Shule.
What's yours, Aaron?
My Twitter is Aaron A. Stanford.
And
well, I got the middle initial. I mean, that's something. I think it's
mine
pretty
is,
inventive.
At Terry Metalis. Or Metalis, depending on what you feel like.
Depending if you're me. And my name is Clark Wolf. Clark with an E, Wolf with an E. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.